You're listening to Greater LA, KCRW show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It sounds like an unremarkable morning for Dr. Susan Partovi, walking her four dogs near her home in Venice Beach.
Well, I'm on Abikini, kind of a ghost town, and walking the pups. And I stopped to get a coffee at the butcher's daughter. It's nice that they're open. No one else was in there.
Dr. Partovi isn't just out to get caffeine. She's also carrying a pack of face masks. She's a local pioneer in street medicine, tending to LA's homeless residents where they live. Well, now with COVID-19, unhoused people are even more vulnerable than they were before. Dr. Partovi isn't the only person who provides medical care on the streets of Los Angeles, but she was one of the first to start years ago. So we recently asked her to document some of the outreach that she's doing. She used her iPhone to record some audio diaries to create this snapshot for caring for some of LA's neediest people during a pandemic.
Usually there's a bunch of homeless on Abikini, especially on this one corner. But I don't see any today. So I'm making my way to the boardwalk, so we'll see what happens. Okay.
But right now, she's not officially on the clock. She's just getting a little work in while her dogs get some exercise.
Wow, that's a big encampment. Hey guys, how are you? Did you need a mask? Okay. Try to wear these when you guys are out and about. Okay.
Can I get one more?
Sure. Sure, sure. Is anyone sick in the encampment?
I don't know. I just walked up.
Okay. You're welcome.
Usually, Dr. Partovi does this kind of outreach on the streets of Echo Park, Silver Lake, Koreatown. She works with the nonprofit Homeless Healthcare Los Angeles. So far, she hasn't seen anyone with the telltale COVID symptoms, fever, cough, difficulty breathing. Instead, most of the folks she encounters have the same problems they did before. Anything from hunger to injuries to mental health issues.
Hi, how are you? You doing good?
Once a week, the doctor works from a place called Homeless Healthcare LA's Center for Harm Reduction. It's in Skid Row, where overdoses are still a top concern. On this day, she takes some time to walk around, handing out masks, hand sanitizer, and Narcan. Narcan's a nasal spray that you can use to treat a narcotic overdose.
Hey, does anyone need Narcan? Narcan.
Here's how she explains to one guy how to administer it.
Wait like maybe 15 seconds, see if they wake up. Usually they don't wake up on the first one. So you just do another one, wait another 15 seconds, and there's four in here.
Then she's on her way. Now, the streets are not empty in Skid Row, as you know. Tents are up, people are out, some wearing masks, some not.
Do you need a hand sanitizer, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
At one point, she heads over to a facility that has a 24-hour shower, toilet, and laundry station exclusively for Skid Row residents. But when she gets there...
Well, I'm at the refresh spot, and unfortunately, one of the staff members tested positive, so... They closed down today. This is really an essential need here in Skid Row, and closing it down, like there's bathrooms and showers. So anyway, we'll see what happens, but it's a real bummer.
Since this was recorded, the refresh spot has reopened, but it's scary to think of the damage that the virus could do in a neighborhood where residents have so few hygiene resources. It's already seen one outbreak. At the nearby Union Rescue Mission, about 100 people recently tested positive. Most were asymptomatic, but two people died. At other testing sites on Skid Row, 13 people have tested positive, and hundreds more are waiting for results. Now, Dr. Partovi says even with all that outbreak, the virus has not hit as hard as it could. Yet. She says she's doing her best to keep that from happening. That story was produced by KCRW's Anna Scott.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled.
This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
The Union Rescue Mission, which sits in the heart of Skid Row in downtown L.A., has been in operation, believe it or not, since 1891. In more recent years, as L.A.'s homeless population has grown and grown and grown, so has the mission's mission, hosting more than 1,300 guests a day. It's a place that's been hit hard during this pandemic. Back in March, the Union Rescue Mission lost a driver, Gerald Chiroma, to the coronavirus. And since then, about 100 of its guests and workers have tested positive for COVID-19. Andy Bales is CEO of the Union Rescue Mission, and he's with us right now. Andy, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
I'm so sorry, by the way, for your loss of Gerald. That must have been a tough moment for you and everybody else over there.
That was absolutely a horrific moment, and probably never going to get over the thought of that, or the trauma of that, or the hurt of that. And I guess the only good thing about it, Gerald's battle really woke us all up to know what kind of battle we were facing. And as he struggled, we buckled down. And even as he fought for his life, it drew us closer together to just take on this monster COVID that has invaded. And it really has been like playing chess with a genius monster as we've tried to keep our guests and our staff out of harm's way in the battle of our lives.
Certainly a battle that a lot of people are waging right now. Give us the latest, Andy. How many cases of COVID-19 are you guys dealing with right now?
Well, it's exactly as you said. It looks like we are through this first round of the battle with an even 100 cases. 75 have had no symptoms. 25 did have symptoms, and included the case with Gerald Chiroma, the loss of a beloved teammate who came here as a guest, went through recovery, overcame his addiction, became an apprentice driver, then a driver. So we lost Gerald, and then we quickly cried out to decompress or lessen our number of guests, and we pleaded with the county to get our most frail and vulnerable out of harm's way and out to private hotels. The county obliged, came in, moved many, I think at least 280 frail and elderly and vulnerable out of harm's way, out to private lodging and hotels. And yet the COVID-19 monster, as I describe it, tracked down one of those frail and elderly who did not test positive, but tracked him down to a local hotel. So Muhammad Islam was also a casualty of this battle. And it seems like we've made it through this round and all negatives this week, no positives. Every week's been a little better. We had 16, then 7, then 3, then 2, and looks like now 0. And Dr. Maxine Liggins from the Department of Public Health said last week that she's never seen a group in all of her years battle a pandemic like we have, and that she'd write it up. And then today she said we're actually making history and becoming a model for the rest of the country of how a large mission can battle a pandemic. But what has been the battle of my life, certainly, and really the battle of our lives in 128 years, this mission has never experienced anything like these last 8 weeks. It has been a nightmare during the day, and it's given me nightmares at night. I know I'm going to be forever harmed by what we and the team have gone through here. In fact, our board of directors has lined up counseling and group counseling for us, because this has been fierce. It's been 16-hour days and sometimes 18-hour days of a constant battle.
Fingers crossed that those numbers keep going down and are zero and zero and moving forward, that there aren't any new cases over at the Union Rescue Mission there. I know your policy is to take in anyone that asks for help. Has COVID made you think twice about that approach? Have you changed anything in light of what's going on?
Yeah, when we had several floors on quarantine, we were no longer allowed to take folks in. We did keep the one promise of never turning away a family. We put families up in hotels. But it looks like when we get to all zeros this round, we'll be able to accept anyone back who needs to come back and hasn't found housing through the county. And then we'll begin to be able to accept others in. But I know, and I'm glad you said it, this is just the first round of this battle. Until we come up with a vaccine, we will have to continue wearing masks. We will have to continue the 6-foot distance. We'll have to continue wearing gloves, taking all the precautions.
Well, I want to ask you that, Andy, because I know it's got to be almost impossible when you have so many people there. What are we talking? We're talking hundreds and hundreds of people who are guests at your mission. How do you keep them all separated by at least 6 feet?
So that's what I meant about the monster, the chess game with the monster, because as we carried this out, we moved from having quarantine in our gym, quarantine in our chapel, and quarantine on our fifth floor to a brand new arrangement of quarantine made out of a second floor cafeteria and second floor boardroom and staff restrooms. So we played chess. And now, as we begin to accept people back, we're going to have to set up 6 different quarantine sites in the building. So it's going to be a game of chess in reverse as we bring people back.
You mentioned the hotel rooms that the county has been trying to get more unhoused people into, and the frailest, the most vulnerable, into hotel rooms. Has it been enough, Andy?
It was enough initially for us. But I have to be honest with you, because it hasn't been enough, people are getting returned to us more quickly than we ever planned or the county ever planned. And that's why I say we're playing chess in reverse now. They took out about 280 people, and we're so thankful for that. They had hopes of getting all of those people, frail and elderly and vulnerable, into housing. But I think maybe 70 out of the 280, one quarter, will end up in housing. The other 210 will be returned to us, because the other part of the story is this pandemic has wiped out our local economy, our national economy, wiped out our county's coffers, our city's coffers. So the plans the county had are now going to be harmed by the lack of funding in order to even carry out this plan. And any future plans for housing, we're going to change our plans, because we're going to have about half the capacity from now on caused by this new world regulations. And we're going to have to expedite plans to create satellites around Los Angeles much more quickly and much more of an innovative way. And I think that's what the county is going to have to do exactly, too. They're going to have to move away from the $700,000 per unit and move more to mobile homes or tiny homes or 3D concrete printed homes.
Well, you see the real world results, right, of a bad economy.
Yes, we are going to be a lower capacity to face a much greater need in the future.
Have you been tested for COVID-19? I mean, have other people at the mission been tested? How is that going over there?
So miraculously, I've tested negative for 4 weeks in a row. Everybody under our roof has been tested, staff and guests. And we just applaud the Department of Public Health and Department of Public Health Services and the firemen who are out here risking their lives every week testing us. And we're thankful for it. That's the reason we've been able to work through this. It was a great strategy. Weekly universal testing.
How are you doing personally? You have a big family. I know you got grown kids. You have grandkids and foster kids. I mean, are you concerned about bringing this home to them?
I'm concerned about bringing it home. My wife is the charge nurse on the COVID-19 floor of her hospital. Their numbers have only doubled. Right. They've gone from a patient in every room to 2 patients in every room. So she avoids me, wanting to keep me healthy because I'm vulnerable and susceptible. And so she avoids me by 6 feet. I avoid my mom, who's 86, who lives in our home, and our grandkids avoid both of us. They don't come to visit. They talk to us over Zoom, and it's been a very lonely time, and at a time when you need people more than ever, and you need a hug more than ever. I rescued a dog from the Humane Society, Stanley, early on because I needed somebody to hug. Now he goes on long walks with my wife and likes her better than me. So it's been a very lonely battle at a time when you need people the most.
I want to talk about this thing that happened to you. A few years back, you contracted this flesh-eating bacteria on Skid Row. You had to have part of your leg amputated, which might have made people think twice about even the line of work that they're in, but you went right back to the mission. This was from just walking on the sidewalk. I mean, there were so many germs and bacteria, right?
Yeah, it was human waste on the sidewalk. It was E. coli, staph, and strep, flesh-eating disease.
Oh.
And destroyed my leg over the course of 2 years. And then I got it removed on a Thursday, and I was back at work on a Monday. I'm not going to let anything stop me. People didn't want me to come to work with this COVID-19 because I'm a type 1 diabetic for 48 years. I have heart disease and kidney disease. I had a couple heart attacks and a quadruple bypass before I got a kidney transplant. So I have low immunity, but there was no way I wasn't going to be on the front lines with my team. How could I ask my team to risk their lives and be on the front line if I wasn't with them? So I've had no hesitation from returning after losing my leg, and certainly no hesitation from battling this COVID-19. How could I not be here and be a leader?
Andy Bales, CEO of the Union Rescue Mission. By the way, President George H.W. Bush named him one of his 1,000 points of light. He certainly is a beacon for a lot of folks in Los Angeles. Andy, thank you so much for being with us on the show today.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Now to the helpers.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy.
Oh, baby, how do you know?
Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
COVID-19 has done a number on the economy, on supply chains, and the availability of food. But getting fresh produce to food insecure areas of Los Angeles has been a problem even before this pandemic hit. Now the volunteer folks who plant and care for trees as a service, it's in their name after all, are delivering fruit trees to help in a future harvest, one home at a time. Steven Salazar Caesar is the senior manager of community organizing for Tree People. Hi, Steven.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I'm all right. Tell us about Tree People. How does this work, actually?
Sure. So Tree People, we're an environmental org that's been around in LA for almost 50 years now. And we work to inspire, engage, and support people to take action in their communities around climate change and creating sustainable communities that can be resilient in the face of that. And so one of the things we do is we plant trees, and we've planted, you know, over 1 million going back, the last few decades, and we plant tens of thousands each year. And we really focus our work in areas of the county that suffer the most negative impacts from climate change and are the most vulnerable to that, to the extreme heat and to the extreme weather events that they experience. And so we focus our work in different parts of the county. The three main ones being the Northeast San Fernando Valley, Southeast LA County, and South LA.
Well, then this pandemic hits, Stephen, and obviously that upends everything. And now you're delivering fruit trees, right?
Yeah, that's right. So when all this happened, we had to think creatively about how can we still do our work and still be of service to these communities. And we previously had visions of doing like an ice cream truck model where we roll through the block and give out free trees. And so, you know, we're doing a bit of that. We're going door to door, and people reserve and they pick out the tree they want, and we're actually able to go and leave the tree there and leave material that teaches them how to plant and care for it, and and really have that connection and bring some joy in such a really difficult time for a lot of people. And so we find that this has been a way to maintain that connection with the people we work with in these communities, and also hopefully bring some you know, life and brightness to their homes when so much around us feels out of control.
When are the next deliveries? Who's getting what?
Yeah, so in Commerce, we're going to continue with another 100 or so in the next couple of weeks. And so it'll be 200 total trees to 200 homes in Commerce after the next couple of weeks.
What kind of trees are they?
So right now we're doing apples, peaches, and apricots. And the peaches are the real popular ones right now.
What kind of problem, Stephen, has food insecurity been in some of these poor neighborhoods? You mentioned, Northeast San Fernando Valley, East LA, South LA. Obviously, these are food deserts. A lot of grocery stores have moved out. There aren't very many farmers markets nearby. I mean, we've seen this, right? Like over the course of decades.
Definitely, yeah. And it goes hand in hand with everything else we do, right? So, you know, we view trees as a way to save lives, right? So, you know, each year people around the world, and especially here in LA, they die from extreme heat and air pollution. And that's only going to get worse with climate change, right? In those same communities, there's not always access to fresh fruit. And it's something that is, you know, is a life source. And it's something that is really important to us along with all our other goals. And so, yeah. And so the communities that suffer, you know, greater impacts from extreme heat and air pollution and other things and other environmental injustices suffer the same injustices in social issues and other issues. And so food insecurity goes right along with that. And so we're trying to think holistically about how, you know, a tree could impact other parts of their lives. And it's something we really think is important. So in every grant we write and every project we do, we try to incorporate the fruit tree aspect of that because one, it's really popular with people. And two, we know that it could provide for generations after us.
How did you get involved in this project in the first place?
Yeah, so I actually used to be a reporter at the LA Times, and I love journalism, and I love, you know, such, you know, the impact you could have through that. But I was at a point in my life where I really wanted to have more hands-on impact, and so I went back and got into social work. I got a master's in social work and wanted to work in actually criminal justice reform. And you know, and then I learned about, you know, environmental justice and learned about how, you know, this is the most, you know, prevalent problem that our communities are facing. And I could potentially help these same communities, like I mentioned, how everything's so intersectional. I could help these communities by working on an environmental angle and coming in from that way and being of service in a way that could help generations deal with this problem that we're all going to face, but these communities are going to face worse impacts. And so, yeah, I saw it as a social justice, thing I could do and really dedicate myself to a problem that we know is there, but we're not acting quickly enough.
How does it feel to be a helper?
It's cool, man. I just want to, you know, do my best. But there's, you know, there's thousands of people in LA that are doing great stuff. And I just want to fill in this little part. And everyone at Tree People, there's such a great energy around doing this work, and it's really what drives the organization and drives me. And so it feels good to be able to bring a little bit of joy.
A lot of little becomes a ton of big, right?
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. Stephen Salazar-Caesar, the Senior Manager of Community Organizing for Tree People. Stephen, thank you for your time, and thanks for doing what you're doing.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.